And I know you're listening, Kyle. We should all give a clap for Kyle and all the other people that are out there, all these other homeless youth and foster youth and runaway youth is what we're going to transition to right now. So this is for you, Kyle Maxey.
Yeah, Mash, thanking you for listening to the October 4th edition of the Without a Roof Radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM. Find us, man. We're out on social media. One of the best ways to find us is Google Without a Roof. We come right to the top, both the radio show and my homepage at woaroof.tumblr.com. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. Check us out. If you'd like to support this program and others, you can always go to kzfr.org, left elevator bar, hit the tip jar.
Yelmo Mash here, host of
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by the generous contributions of Robert Amendola and Associates, a law corporation providing legal representation to accident victims. If you've been involved in a car, truck, or vehicle accident of any kind, the law firm of Robert Amendola and Associates is there for you. Call them at 916-924-8787. Hmong translation is available by calling Mr. Wei Yang at 916-599-0039. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to the October 4th, 2017 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about cows and climate change, a movie about elephants that actually harms elephants, and a bunch of tips for vegan baking, and also alliteration. Over to you, Jeannie.
Yes, we have a report from the UK-based think tank, the Food Climate Research Network, FCRN, which just launched its latest in-depth report on the topic of grazing livestock and climate change. Written by an international group of experts, the report, which is titled Grazed and Confused, adds clarity to the debate around livestock farming and meat and dairy consumption. I want to share an excerpt from a blog post written about this report by one of the researchers, Tara Garnett, who has worked on food issues for over 20 years, first in the NGO, the non-governmental organization community, and since 2005 within the academic sector. She then founded the Food Climate Research Network, the body that released this report. The report analyzed claims made in the debate surrounding so-called grass-fed beef, which we know about here in Butte County, the greenhouse gases that the cows emit, and the possibility that, through their grazing actions, they can help remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. The beef industry gets bad press, environmentally speaking. We have all seen reports highlighting its high carbon footprint in, accompanied by images of burping cows and devastated rainforests. But some argue that beef from grass-fed cows has higher welfare, nutrition, and other credentials than meat from animals that eat intensively farmed high-protein feeds, such as that given in feedlots, which we've talked about before. In truth, most cattle get a mix of high-protein feeds and grass. Very few cattle are solely raised on feedlots, as we've talked about. They almost always start out on pasture. And very few animals are completely grass-fed or pastured for their whole lives. So many people, mostly ranchers and people in the meat industry, argue that purely grass-fed cows, which we've just established is not common, not only produce less emissions than those fed soy or grain, but that grass-fed animals can even help absorb carbon from the atmosphere because grass captures carbon from the air during photosynthesis.
Wait a minute. What? I haven't read this article, so I'm interested to see how this gets refuted because the grass is going to grow either way.
Most studies conclude that if you look at the amount of land used and greenhouse gas emissions produced per pound of meat, pasture-based cattle actually have a greater climate impact than animals fed grains and soy. This is because commercial feeds tend to be less fibrous than gas, and so than grass, and so cows that eat them produce less methane, which cows release through burping and farting, basically. And methane is a potent greenhouse gas; it's more potent than carbon dioxide. Animals in more intensive grain-fed systems, such as feedlots, reach slaughter weight faster than grass-fed animals, so their emissions of greenhouse gases over their entire lifetime is lower. However, here's the interesting part for you, Danny. However, some academics and many within the alternative farming movement challenge those conclusions. They say that these studies only factored in one side of the greenhouse gas emissions, the animals' emissions, right, their farts and burps. They've been inspired by ecologist and farmer Alan Savory, who's developed a system of principles that are called holistic grazing management. And these farmers argue that if you graze cattle in the right way, their nibbling and trampling actions can actually stimulate grass to put down deep roots and more actively remove carbon from the atmosphere. And this actually is a somewhat plausible scenario under certain circumstances, which is why this group, FCRN, the Food Climate Research Network, wanted to look into this for their Grazed and Confused report.
Oh, so without laughing again at this, I guess the theory here is the grass, even though the grass itself is getting mowed down and eaten, it's having to grow deeper and deeper roots, which are sort of a carbon sink.
Exactly.
All right, let's see if this pans out.
So some ranchers argue that the amount of carbon removed by this type of grazing can actually exceed the animal's total emissions.
Amazing.
In other words, they argue raising cattle on grasslands should be seen as an essential part of the climate solution. Advocates of grass-fed cattle also point out that methane gas gets broken down in the atmosphere after about 12 years, so it's only a temporary problem. These and other arguments are even leading to moves to award some carbon credits to grazing initiatives, right? Total greenwashing. Let's try and put a green spin on this system.
It's only temporary for 12 years if they stop raising cattle.
Exactly. Right to the nub of it, as usual, Danny. So are these claims justified? The Food Climate Research Network folks, FCRN, decided to take a look through the evidence to find out. And recognizing that although the grass-fed issue is about multiple social, ethical, and environmental concerns, as an organization, they decided to focus just on one concern, which is climate change, right? I mean, we can talk about grass-fed in terms of, you know, is it ethically more humane for the animal than feedlots? We can talk about, as we did, this continuum of the lifespan of a cow, like part of it's on grass, part of it might be in a feedlot, and like, you know, that.
All the different ways to quantify horror, right?
Yes. So they just asked one simple question. They were looking at basically what is the net climate impact of grass-fed ruminants, taking into account all greenhouse gas emissions and removals. So they actually found that well-managed grazing in some contexts can cause some carbon to be sequestered in soils. But the climate, soils, and management regime all have to be just right. Therefore, the maximum global potential, using generous assumptions, would offset only 4 to 11% of total livestock emissions and less than 2% of total annual greenhouse, you know, gas emissions globally. So in other words, grazing livestock, even in a best-case scenario, are net contributors to the climate problem, as are all livestock. Good grazing management cannot offset its own emissions, let alone those arising from other systems of animal production, right? Which which you and I knew, but these folks took a look at existing studies that have already been done and produced a heavily footnoted final report on this issue.
It's always good to do the science.
Yeah, you know, but it's sad because sometimes science doesn't matter. Facts don't matter.
Right.
You know, we're sort of in a post-factual kind of era, which is causing consternation and chaos in many different realms. Anyway, so what's more, soils being farmed using a new system of management, such as grazing, actually do reach carbon equilibrium, where the carbon that flows into the soil equals the carbon flows out within a few decades, right? So that was like your point in the beginning. Like they're growing grass, they're eating the grass, and they're pooping it, right? It's not like really being sequestered. It's not exactly, you know, being...
They might grow deeper roots, but they don't grow endlessly deeper roots, and the grass will die eventually,
right?
No matter what, and return that to the atmosphere.
So anyway, so this means that any benefits from grass-fed cows are time-limited, while the problems of methane and other gases continue for as long as the livestock remain on the land, right? That's your other point. So as long as there's cows on the land, they're producing methane. Even if that methane has a relatively shorter lifespan than CO2, if you always have animals grazing, you're always producing more methane.
Obviously, the solution is more cows.
plus, in these scenarios, any change in management or climate or a drought can overturn any gains that you might have made from these ideal scenarios. And the grazed and confused report went on to look more closely at the methane issue. And it states that the argument that its impact, the methane impact, is temporary and thus not important is wrong. While the warming effect of any given pulse of methane is temporary, the total warming impacts will continue for as long as the source of methane continues. Methane will be emitted and continue to warm the planet as long as the cattle are still reared on that land. And the problem only disappears if ruminant production is abandoned. So, yeah, so if a rancher or an advocate of this holistic grazing management system says, yeah, we're not producing as much methane, or methane is not a significant contributor to climate change. Well, it is if it's always being produced.
We're going to start seeing methane neutral gluten-free beef soon, aren't we?
The grazed and confused report went on to examine land use issues, right? So how we use land is also changing, which poses new challenges. Grazing ruminants have historically driven deforestation and the carbon dioxide emissions associated with it, right? Think of slashing and burning forests to create open space that cattle can graze on, right? Burning those forests produces CO2. But today, the demand for soy and grains to feed not only to cattle, but to pigs, poultry, and other species poses a new threat in itself. This system drives the conversion of grassland to grow grains and the release of carbon stored in it. And that said, ruminants such as cows are still implicated. Forests are cut down and grassland grazing is being intensified to support more livestock farming. And the report also concluded that growing food for animals means using fertilizers or planting soybeans or other kinds of beans. And the application of fertilizer to grow these other feedstock, these other crops, can actually cause nitrous oxide emissions on top of the methane that the animals produce. So in other words, whatever the system and the animal type, rising animal production and consumption drives damaging changes in land use and associated release of greenhouse gases. And I'll post a link to that blog piece and the report, the PDF report from titled Grazed and Confused by the Food Climate Research Network, a think tank out of Britain, to the Facebook page for this site.
And I think it's worth going back to note that even your Neiman Ranch grass-fed beef are most likely supplemented with non-grass foods, because they have to be to reach slaughter weight. And so, again, you're still having the same deforestation and fertilization problems as non-grass-fed beef.
Absolutely. And, you know, in a state like California with our unpredictable water cycles, we're in a Mediterranean climate here. You know, and any drought is going to change the calculations of the ranchers and of the greenhouse gases that are emitted. Yeah, so, yeah, it's just an interesting article. And, yeah, I encourage folks to go ahead and look that up and give it a read. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KCFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. You're listening to the host, Jeannie Trezino, and Danny Toms. What's up next, Danny?
The Performing Animal Welfare Society, also known as PAWS, and Bob Barker have joined together on a petition asking FJ Productions to reconsider use of a live elephant in its current production of the film Saving Flora. Get ready for the irony. Saving Flora is about an elephant fleeing a menacing circus who gets helped by two teenagers. In real life, the starring elephant Ty has been subjected to the same training methods used in abusive circuses and has even been made to perform in circuses herself. Hab Trunk Will Travel, the California-based company that, quote, owns Ty.
Owns in quotes, for sure.
Was caught on camera during a training session in which handlers forcibly struck and hooked elephants with a bull hook, which is a weapon resembling a fireplace poker with a sharpened metal tip and hook. Now, Jeannie, I don't remember. Have we banned the bull hook in California? Yep. Or was it, so this was probably before then or in violation of that?
Legislation has been passed.
Hasn't.
And it doesn't go into effect until January 2018.
I see. Ty's owners publicly defended the cruel and outrageous practice of using bull hooks to compel obedience and have consistently opposed legislation to better protect captive elephants.
And why is that? Because we've always done it this way.
Right,
we have
same
no
excuse.
Room to adapt and change.
Hab Trunk, and if you can't torture the elephant into doing what you want, perhaps it won't perform for you and you'll have to find a real job. Hab Trunk Will Travel opposed efforts to pass legislation to ban the use of bullhooks in California, but were unsuccessful. The California bullhook ban, as Jeannie noted presciently earlier, will go into effect January 2018.
It's like I have the ability to forecast the future.
It would have helped if I'd read this a little sooner today. The petition on change.org calls for FJ Productions to reconsider its use of Ty and instead employ a computer-generated elephant. Bob Barker was quoted as saying, "There's no place for animal cruelty in entertainment. Today we have the technology to replace live animals in film productions, so there's no excuse for using live elephants or other captive wild animals who are cruelly trained to perform."
So I just want to say here, Bob Barker is not a young man.
No.
He's like probably in his 90s, right? So if he can change,
right,
anybody can change.
Right?
Definitely. And he's contributed a lot of money to a lot of animal causes for a lot of years, and he's right. He's a good guy.
PAWS, Bob Barker, top celebrities, elephant sanctuaries, national animal protection organizations such as the Animal Legal Defense Fund, the Animal Welfare Institute in Defense of Animals, as well as many conservationists all signed an open letter to FJ Productions urging the company to do this replacement. Alas, they're still, I think, refusing to do it. This reminds me a lot of Free Willy, right? The whale or orca?
It was an orca.
And Free Willy was, you know, a captive animal who I believe died in captivity. And it's just kind of message you want to send your kids, showing them these movies and answering those questions later about what happened.
I just think that in this, you know, we're in 2017. Free Willy was like from the 90s, I believe, right? And the pushback, the strong pushback and the much greater concern for animal welfare that people have now than they did even back then, it just seems naive, to the nth degree to propose these types of films in this day and age.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about this production company, if they have done any reasonably good movies or if this is very low budget or what's going on here, but... just the very idea that you're going to torture an animal in a movie about saving that animal is just ludicrous.
Well, and just the idea that you're going to get away with using elephants, which are a very charismatic and beloved animal, and not get any pushback from your viewing audience is, I just think it's strategically naive for any film production to propose this and... for a big movie production company to fund it.
Right.
And I mean, they have other projects that they could fund.
You know, in the same way people will say we might live in a vegan bubble, I think people just live in an exploitation bubble, you know.
Maybe.
I can exploit anything that I can afford, you know.
Maybe. But
no second
I think
thoughts.
That, you know, I think that movie companies, you know, they have a reputation to protect and they don't necessarily want to jeopardize it. And yet you get producers greenlighting these types of films and giving them money to proceed. I mean, I would imagine even the star, I don't know who the stars are in this movie who's been cast, but I imagine that they'd be vulnerable too and maybe resistant, you know, to being attached to this kind of bad publicity, if nothing else, right?
Yeah, one hopes.
So, anyway, thanks, Danny. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. We are moving on to another story. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about vegan food, right? We talk about reasons to go vegan a lot. Certainly there's plenty, but I don't think we talk that much about what to eat. So I thought we'd share some baking tips from Chloe Coscarelli, who is a vegan chef and restaurateur who made history by winning the Food Network's Cupcake Wars show 5 years ago in 2012 and revolutionizing vegan baking to a mass audience. I think I already knew about how great vegan cooking could be and vegan cupcakes could be prior to Cupcake Wars, but she made it big on a big public stage for the Food Network.
Awesome.
So yeah, and you know, and we know there's some of you out there, you're cringing when you hear about a baked good or maybe any food like a cupcake that's vegan, right? If you're not familiar with eating vegan, you might think that a vegan cupcake or cookie won't taste good. But vegan chef Chloe Coscarelli and many other vegan chefs have set the record straight. And I encourage, Danny and I both encourage you to try out some vegan baking, either in your own kitchen or try to scrounge them up in Chico, right? So we're in Chico. Somebody wanted to get some vegan baked goods. I think Upper Crust is now offering a scone.
I've heard. Lovely Layers.
Lovely Layers Cakery. They offer a vegan, gluten-free option, I think, all the time.
Yep.
So those two places for sure. I think a couple of other places, maybe intermittently. And there's a couple of cookie brands that you can get at just about any stores now.
Trader Joe's has great like trail mix cookies. Also, be aware, you know, gluten free is one thing, vegan is another. You often might not like a vegan gluten free baked good if you aren't already gluten free because they're definitely going to be a different texture without wheat in them. Yeah. So don't go assume that vegan baking is bad if you just dislike gluten-free.
Yeah, don't assume that if you don't like the vegan gluten-free item that it doesn't suit your taste because it's vegan. It could be because it's gluten-free. Anyway, so here's a few tips from Chloe Coscarelli. One, keep the right staples on hand at all times, right? So be sure that you have like coconut milk instead of regular dairy milk on hand or any number of the plant-based milks that you can just get at the regular supermarket now. They're not even all in the health food stores. You can keep stuff like espresso powder to add some depth to your chocolate recipes. Be sure you have fresh baking powder. Have high-quality dark chocolate on hand. All those things help improve the final product. Next, master the basics. If you already know how to bake, you should be able to switch over to baking vegan recipes pretty easily. She recommends, though, that if you're not a big baker yet, that you start out with something simple, like a chocolate chip cookie recipe. And I think that's wise advice for anybody. Cookies are simple to bake, delicious to eat, and they're easy to transport. So they're a pretty good entry point to vegan baking.
Right. I mean, you know, don't try to make a crepe or a French meringue pie right off the bat and... In fact, did you ever try to make a meringue pie before you tried to do a vegan thing? Like, your go-to stuff is, you know, a chocolate cake and cookies. So make those. They always work.
And then know which vegan swaps to make. Every recipe is different. So if you're creating your own vegan recipes, it might take some trial and error to figure out what vegan swaps you want to make. And the trickiest substitute, of course, is the egg. And if you want to replace eggs in a dish like a quiche or an omelet, that's actually not too hard because you can substitute tofu in most cases and you can add in some turmeric and it'll get a yellowish color. So there, the trick is to get the right seasoning blend to go and season that tofu. You can also use chickpea flour for omelets and eggless scrambles. But for vegan baking, replacing eggs can be the trickiest part. And so, you have to look and see what the eggs are doing in your recipe. Are they providing structure? Or are they acting as a leavening? or are they providing liquid and fats? And so there's a bunch of different things you can do to provide those different elements. One, you can use a flax egg, which is flax seed ground up mixed with water. And one egg in that case is 1 tablespoon of flax plus 3 tablespoons of warm water, and mix it up and let it sit for a while. And that will form a sort of gelatinous eggy type substance, gel, that you can put into your baked goods. Chia seeds will do the same thing. There's a couple of powders. Energy egg replacer is one that you can use that's been around for a while. And that's a mix of starches and leavening ingredients like baking powder. So they also function kind of like eggs in a vegan recipe. I think that the best tip you want to follow is, rather than trying to veganize a non-vegan recipe, seek out an already vegan recipe from like a trusted vegan cookbook author like Chloe Coscarelli or somebody like Issa Chandra Moskowitz. Although that's my advice. I know Danny's better at improvising in the kitchen.
Jeannie could see me grimacing over here. Believe it or not, Betty Crocker is one of my go-tos. Still, though I skip the Jell-O and ham recipes. And I think you try all these substitutes and you kind of learn what they do. So like I said earlier, for basic kind of cakes and cookies, it's often just, baking soda and vinegar kind of swap that we'll get to in a bit. And sometimes I find the veganized official baking recipes that call for more exotic ingredients and lots of them to be a little intimidating or overly complex. They don't all do that, but some of that could drive you away if you're like, I don't have flax seed and I don't feel like grinding seeds right now.
Sure.
So, back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, a really good way to add leavening to your baked good without relying on eggs is mixing about a teaspoon of baking soda with a teaspoon of white vinegar to replace one egg. And this is actually something called a wacky cake, or common to Depression or World War II era cake recipes when eggs were scarce.
Right. And so, like, you know, what could be more masculine than a World War II era cake, you know, if you feel like vegan cakes are going to be wimpy, you know? Call it that. It's a World War II cake.
All right. Well, we're going to start wrapping up here. And my only other tip is be confident in what you make. And do yourself a favor, and if the circumstance is right, really don't divulge that your cupcake is vegan, because that will trigger all sorts of prejudgments on your baked good. So, that is about it. I want to just give a shout out to the Chico Peace and Justice Center. They're having their annual dinner tonight, Community Rising. It started at 5, but you can still make it there in time for dinner. A shout out to Lakshmi Ariyatnam, who will be receiving a well-deserved Peace Endeavor Award at that dinner. Lakshmi, I'll just let the audience know, is a longtime member of Chico Vegan Meetup and is also active with the Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals. And she's just living proof that social justice is not just for the human species.
She's great. She's so nice.
She's a wonderful human being. So, and if you head over to the Chico Masonic Family Center right now and buy a ticket, you might even get to try one of the several vegan lasagnas that are featured during the Lasagna Lollapalooza. I myself made 2 of them. So if you tried one of those, let me know. And we have one last piece of business to take care of, and that's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
Our quote of the week is from George Monbiot, the British writer known for his environmental work and political activism. Quote, "Now is the time for a new revolution, almost as profound as those other great shifts, the switch to a plant-based diet. It's time to abandon the excuses, the fake facts, and false comforts. It is time to see our moral choices as our descendants will."
Thank you very much.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, hunted, raced, experimented upon, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, go to the archives at kzfr.org and look for Non-Human Radio. This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino.